Welcome to Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. This is our super special Valentine's Day bonus. And we will be focusing on just one thing, which is fudge. And it comes into our family through a very special person. Booty, can you tell us about Aunt Annie and the family fudge tradition?
So our dear Aunt Anne is our mom's, hi mom,
hi mom,
younger sister. She's always been the silliest of our aunties, I would say.
Yes, very fun.
She's very fun. She has an excellent sense of humor. She does have a cameo in one of our videos, which I will highlight because at the end, basically, we were in a yarn shop. And she pretends to model a scarf, and she's very silly. We love her to death, and she has this most excellent recipe for fudge. She has been known for her fudge that she sends us every year for Christmas for many, many years. And it's absolutely one of the highlights of our Christmas. And she's also multi-craftual. She's an amazing artist. For many years, she made pet portraits. And we have some of our cats and even my daughter's gecko. She's also been sewing for her whole life. I talked about this a long time ago, but she made my sister Melissa and me Raggedy Ann dolls that were just the best. So they were like 3 feet high, so they were almost as tall as we were. Love you, Aunt Annie. So you want to tell us about the fudge?
We can take a picture of this. As all good recipes, it's got a lot of spatters on it. I love that when, you know, you open the book and it just opens up to the page that's got the most spatters in, and that's how you know that that's the recipe that you use a lot. I can see it's dated 1968. I do remember her telling us that she made it and sent it overseas for her first husband who was stationed, well, I think in Vietnam. It kind of reminded me of Ina making the fruitcake. So it's called Overseas Fudge because it was designed to be sent overseas. And you start with, I used about 5-quart Le Creuset or Le Creuset, as we say in America. But that kind of pan is good. It is going to boil up, but it's better if you've got a broad-based source of heat as opposed to a tall and narrow pan. So you take one can of evaporated milk. I noticed she has 14 and a half ounces. Our cans now, Booty, did you notice this?
Yeah.
12 ounces.
They chintzed us.
They chintzed us again.
Yep.
So, and I have to say, the first time I made this, I didn't notice that. Second time I made it, I added a little, like 2 ounces of milk or cream. I'm not sure it matters, but one can of evaporated milk, ideally 14 and a half ounces. Although if you can find that, it's going to be from the 1960s.
Maybe don't use that.
A quarter pound or one stick of butter. It says or margarine, but that's just a bad idea. Yeah. Ideally, it should be salted butter. I usually use unsalted for most things, but apparently that little bit of salt can help with the tendency of fudge to absorb moisture. So you want the salted butter, and then 4.5 cups of sugar.
Sugar. It makes 5 pounds.
It does make 5 pounds. So that is something to consider, is that you're going to have a lot of fudge.
You eat only a pound of that 5 pounds of fudge, then you're really only eating less than a cup of sugar. So, so it's really fine.
Yeah, well, and it's gluten-free.
I love when recipes say that. Why would there be gluten in this? Yeah,
because all it is sugar.
That's really healthy.
Yeah, so it's totally healthy.
It's got dairy.
Dairy, yeah. Anyway, so you place the evaporated milk, the stick of butter, the 4.5 cups of sugar into your Le Creuset pan and bring it to a boil. Now, you want to kind of stir it up before you turn the heat on because there's sugar on the bottom there that can burn. You're going to stir it periodically to keep it from sticking. And when it starts to boil, you're going to cover it and let it cook for 5 minutes. You can ask Alexa to set a timer for 5 minutes. That's what I do. After 5 minutes, you remove it from the heat and you fold in the following one at a time. So you're stirring in each of these ingredients until they're melted and then you add the next one. So 1/4 pound of marshmallows. I use the little ones, I just bought them. And then 2 ounces of unsweetened chocolate, then 3 4-ounce bars of sweet chocolate, and then 12 ounces, that's 2 cups of semi-sweet chocolate chips. The one thing that she says that is important is that any combination of chocolate may be used as long as it totals 26 ounces. So the one that I made today, in fact, I used 4 ounces of the unsweetened chocolate. I used Ghirardelli, just one of those 4 ounce bars. They sell Calibut dark chocolate in bags in the grocery store. So I think I used maybe about 18 ounces of that. It was sort of whatever was in the bag. And then the rest of it, so I didn't have that many chocolate chips. And then at the end, so you stir that. And then at the end, you put in a teaspoon of vanilla and you line a, well, I use like a 9 by 13 pan with parchment. You could butter it if you wanted. I don't think you really need to, though. If it's parchment, it's pretty much nonstick. And then you just put it in a nice cool place, wait for it to harden up.
Did you say the nuts? I don't think you said the nuts. Oh my God. Left out the nuts because you don't like the nuts.
No, like nuts. Yeah, I believe I have expounded on like what is that earthy bit of protein that you stuck in the middle of that?
Ruined your fudge.
Yeah, but that is one of the nice things, and apparently the basis of all fudge recipes is that whatever you're going to add, whether it's nuts, marshmallows.
Well, I actually have grown to like the nuts in the fudge. True confessions. I know. But I have to say, raisins are a hard no. I like raisins. I like them in oatmeal and other things. No, in the fudge.
Yeah. No, and any kind of fruit, like any dried fruit, that would be a hard no for me.
Maybe cherries, but yeah, no, I just want the pure chocolate. Bossy and I agree. If it's fudge, it needs to have some chocolate in it. You can add other things. You can add nuts or marshmallows, even orange flavoring, if you like that. If it's one of those, I guess it's called vanilla or white fudge. Yeah, that's not fudge, it's candy.
One of the nice things too is that I added vanilla extract, but you could do a teaspoon or even a tablespoon of espresso coffee. You could add Kahlua from your big girl bottle of Kahlua. You could add some of that.
So Bossy and I got this book called Oh Fudge by,
Lee Edwards Benning.
it's a really good book because she talks about the history of fudge and also how to make it with a whole bunch of different recipes and things. And she talks about how any alcohol that you add, basically the alcohol part gets cooked away and you're left with just the flavor of it. So feel free to add that. But yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the history of fudge.
So we're getting this from Lee Edwards Benning, who was from Ambler, Pennsylvania, which is the town over from Chestnut Hill, Pennsylvania, where Bootie and I grew up. It's O Fudge, a celebration of America's favorite candy with nearly 300 mouth-watering, fully tested recipes. It came out in 1990, which is kind of great because she says things like, if you don't know how far above sea level you are, call your local library and they will be able to tell you.
The first sort of documented recipe comes from a woman at Vassar who got it from a classmate's cousin. And she says in this letter years later, fudge as I first knew it was first made in Baltimore by a cousin of a schoolmate of mine. It was sold in 1886 in a grocery store at 279 William Street for 40 cents a pound, which was probably a lot of money at that time, from my schoolmate, Nanny Hagner. I secured the recipe, and in my first year at Vassar, I made it there. And in 1888, I made 30 pounds for the senior auction, its real introduction to the college, I think. And so from there, other women's colleges, Wellesley and Smith, they made their own versions of it, and it took off across the country. So basically, these women used their kerosene lamps as camp stoves to make fudge.
And I have the sense that it was at night after the lights were out, they would have secret fudge making parties.
Right. Sometimes it didn't always turn out, and they were using the we'll put in the recipe for that. They used a lot less chocolate and they cooked it for a long time. So in that case, it was really a candy, like a caramel that you're adding chocolate to. The one that our aunt uses is a much more foolproof recipe. And we think the secret ingredient might be the marshmallows, because the marshmallows have gelatin and they have some corn syrup. Both of those things prevent the fudge from going wrong. The corn syrup helps the sugar doesn't crystallize, and the gelatin gives it a smoother texture. And then, of course, there's sugar in there too that gets sweetening it as well. So.
Well, I loved the history and how it started with this woman, like you said, this freshman at Vassar. Her name was Emmeline Battersby Hartridge.
Best name. That should be in a Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, exactly. She was originally from Savannah, Georgia, but went up to Vassar, where she made 30 pounds of fudge. And apparently, all her life, she continued to actually make fudge and send it up for alumni fundraising things. But she was the principal of this, or headmistress of this boarding school, the Hartridge School in New Jersey. That school eventually joined with the boys' school across the street. So it kind of reminded me of Springside and Chestnut Hill Academy. And it is now the Wardlaw Hartridge School, and it's still in existence today.
I like that she said that she was kind of a battle axe. It was hard to imagine her being this nice person that made all this fudge. But you know what? You can be both.
You can be both. You can be Aunt Fidget Wonkamstrawn and Aunt Bundle Joy Cozy Sweet at the same time.
Now, of course, Aunt Annie is Aunt Bundle Joy Cozy Sweet.
Sweet, yes. I just love this idea of these women making their own fudge over their kerosene lamps. And the cocoa that I think they originally used came in this tin, and I think that's what they put on top, and it was almost like a way of making the last of the cocos go. But they even made songs about it, which is such a women's college thing. So let me read you. This was the Vassar women's song. We love the sight of the fudge pan bright. We love the sight of the spoon. And better by far than the light of the star is the gas now outshining the moon. Then gather around with whispers profound, for the bell has rung 10 at night. That's when they turned off the lights. With the transom shut at our very last cut, we'll sing to the fudge pan bright. And actually, each school had their own particular recipe. There was the Vassar one, but the Smith College one had more of a spicy one almost. And then the Wellesley women had a different one. And they're all in this book. But I love that it started off as a mistake. And actually, that's the word comes from. Originally from the 17th century, from the word fadge, which meant to throw together haphazardly or clumsily. That over time, I think, came to be associated with that idea of fudging the data, faking it until you make it. It seems like the phrase oh fudge for the nicer oh fuck came later, but.
Right. But it has similar origins. We should say that in the book, she has 10 steps to making no-fail fudge at home. And you think, okay, great. But then the first step has 11 parts. So.
It says, step one, prepare. I do love her frankness in this. In other words, get your act and equipment together. First step, get your shit together. Love that. But then she's got step 1A, and then she's got nine other steps, and then she's got myths. She's bringing in and then saying, myth number one, you have to use a candy thermometer. But she says, you don't have to use a candy thermometer, but if you do, here's the kind you should get.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of nitty-gritty. I do think, thanks to the magic of marshmallows, the recipe that Annie uses is a really good one. And as in most things, what ingredients you use is important. So the better chocolate is going to, of course, get you a better
Yeah.
flavor of fudge. I really liked the Trader Joe's sells a 1 pound plus bar of Belgian chocolate. And I think it's around $8 where I live. So that's a really good thing to use because it's a good quality and you're not breaking the bank. So you have to use that plus chocolate chips and baking squares. If you do that, then it's going to have a richer, darker, chocolatey flavor. So if you like more of a milk chocolate, then they also have a milk chocolate bar. So
Although I will say the first time I made it, I used the Calibut milk chocolate, and the husband and I thought it was good, but it wasn't super chocolatey. And milk chocolate doesn't have as high of a cocoa content. I think it has more milk solids in it. So the second time I made it, and I did put some nuts on the top. I also put some little mini chocolate chips, so I'll take a picture of that. I divided it into thirds. I had sort of the nut third, the midway purest, no nuts, nothing else in the middle, and then the mini chocolate chips. But I did use the dark chocolate, the Calibut, for the second batch, and it's definitely more chocolatey, I would say. You get that chocolate flavor right up front. But I liked being able to do a little bit of three different things so that I can send mom, hi mom, some, and perhaps the ungrateful child. I do think if you like a more chocolatey chocolate, I'd probably go with more dark chocolate. But it's nice because it is a pretty flexible recipe in that you need 26 ounces of chocolate and whatever you have that makes up 26, you can throw in there.
And with 4.5 cups of sugar, it's probably going to taste good. Nobody's going to say no.
Can I just share one other thing that this is kind of an homage to Dad, who actually passed away a couple days before Valentine's Day, but I learned that cocoa comes from the evergreen genus Theobroma, which is the Greek for food of the gods. And we do like to throw in botanical genuses whenever we can as an homage to our father, the botanist,
Who also loved chocolate.
who did love chocolates and who famously came in one day when he was not wearing his glasses and picked up a handful of whole cloves and threw them into his mouth, and then said, Jen, what did you do to these chocolate chips? They're
Those are close,
not chocolate chips,
Mr.
Mr.
Botany.
Yes, but so I think that pretty much sums it up. It was also known as being an aphrodisiac. I didn't know this little fun fact. It was originally used as currency in South America. They ironically did not use gold, which is what all the Europeans wanted. So you could trade 4 cocoa beans for a pumpkin, or 10 for a rabbit, or 8 to 10 for the services of a prostitute. Nice Valentine's Day fact for you. Yeah. It's a fascinating history. Definitely make some fudge. It's great to send to people because it does keep pretty well. And It's a great way to send a little reminder to somebody that you love that you're thinking of them. And that's why we like it. And that's why we love the fudge that Aunt Annie makes us every Christmas. Keep it coming.
Thanks, Annie. And happy birthday.
And happy birthday. And I think it's time to say, go
Go
make some
make some fudge
fudge for
for
Valentine's
Valentine's Day.
Day. And check out our website. We'll put all the recipes and everything on it.